All right. Hello, everybody. We are continuing our study in Visions of God, and we've been studying this now for most of this year. We started in Genesis, and we're going to end in Maps, or at least Revelation. We are in the book of Daniel, and I wanted to share a couple things here as we get started. First of all, what's the purpose of God giving us information in the Bible? What's the purpose?
The bottom line is the salvation of mankind.
Right, that's kind of the big, high, overarching goal. Right. But why is something written?
It's written to be read to be studied to be meditated on, to take action or refrain from action from things you learn.
Yeah. It's written to be read to be understood.
Yes.
Right? And then acted upon, right? That's the sum of what you were saying. Read to be understood. Did God write anything that no man in the Bible, that no man will ever understand? Ever. It wouldn't make any sense, right? The reason he communicated is to communicate, you know, is to get the message to the reader. Now, are some things harder to understand than others in the Bible? Yeah. Even Peter said that. He said that about Paul's writings. He said, our dear brother Paul, who has written many things, some of which are difficult to understand, who unstable people twist as they do the other scriptures. Fascinating little comment there, because there the Apostle Peter equates the writings of Paul with the other scriptures. They are scripture. But he says what? Some of them are difficult to understand and unstable people twist them. So, you know, we can expect that to happen with things we find in the Bible that are difficult to understand. Now, we're in Daniel. Daniel is one of the most disputed and most twisted books in the Bible, right next to Revelation. It's probably number two next to Revelation. And they're very related to each other. And last night when I was coming home from Raleigh, I passed by a church building right here in town. And it said something about, we're going to have this special thing called Landmarks of Prophecy. And I said, oh, okay. And I knew what denomination it was, so I kind of guessed what it was. And then I got home and I found this in my mailbox. You guys might have had similar, hey, you've got the same one. It's going to show up in your sermon today. Okay. So it says, Amazing Facts presents Landmarks of Prophecy, an epic Bible study adventure. And on the front here, it has a bunch of statues kind of superimposed over mesas in Arizona. It's got a big statue of an idol with different medals, which is probably Daniel's, Nebuchadnezzar's first dream. It has a lion with wings. It has a dragon with a bunch of heads with a harlot on it. And in the back it has the Statue of Liberty, which is kind of interesting juxtaposition. And inside it says, are you ready for what's coming? You will understand Israel's future, the rapture, Armageddon, 666, and more. Which recent world events are the fulfillment of prophecy and harbingers of the end? Discover how the Word of God offers you clear answers to these big questions, giving keen insights not only into what lies next in human history, but practical tools on how to help you thrive here and now. So, you know, it's got three parts. Part one, Dream of the Ages, unveiling Earth's final empire, Return of the King, revealing signs of Jesus coming, and the Prince of Pride exposing the vision of Revelation. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically, I did find it interesting that the way it references it on this is it says SDA Church.
Seventh-day Adventist
is what it is, and that's the building right down here. You know, I noticed while I was traveling this week, I was in Raleigh and Clayton, how many traditional denominations have now put their denominational label in subtitles or taken it off their signs entirely. You'll find things that says Friendship Church, Free Will Baptist, right? Or something like that. And you'll see lots and lots of those. It's really interesting that they're hiding their denominational label. But, you know, they should hide it. They should get rid of it, frankly. But I'm going to do a couple of things. First of all, last time we talked about the vision of the four beasts in Daniel chapter 7. And I made a mistake I want to correct, and two, I want to talk a little bit more about it before we get into chapter 8. Now, I have here the... Let me do the mistake first. Okay, when I was talking about... remember, there were four beasts. There was the lion with eagle's wings that was given a man's heart and stood up like a man. That's the first one. I've got to write that out here. That was the lion to the man. The next one was the bear that devoured much flesh. The next one was the leopard with four wings and four heads. The next one was the terrible beast. Okay, so I'm just going to call it a T-Rex. It didn't say it's a T-Rex, but I'll just use that as shorthand. And then it said the great kingdom that followed it was grew up from a rock that was cut out of a mountain without hands. It smote this great image here and tore it down. So what we're seeing here is the map of the book of Daniel. Starts with the first vision of Nebuchadnezzar, then we said these are the nations that it represents. It also says when the rock that's cut out of the mountain without hands is going to strike it and destroy it and take over the whole earth. We said that's obviously the kingdom of Christ, it's the church. And then we had these, the next dream said the lion, the bear, the leopard, and the great beast. And what you're seeing here is you laid out the map, and now it's talking a little more about each section of the map, and now it's going to zoom into the map. And it's going to zoom in. The next prophecy that's in chapter 8 zooms in right to this transition point between Medo-Persia and Greece. And in fact, it says so in the interpretation. The angel tells Daniel, the first thing, the ram with the lopsided horns, are the kings of the Medes and the Persians, and the great goat with the single horn is the king of Greece. So it tells us really clearly what this is. This is going to zoom in on this transition from the Medo-Persian Empire to the Greek Empire. Now you remember the whole theme of the book of Daniel. God sets up kings, he takes down kings. Daniel says that to Nebuchadnezzar. God is in control, period. Of the kingdoms of men, whether they believe in him or not, whether they obey him or not, he's still in control. He's going to work his will. And he's going to use even pagan, blaspheming unbelievers to work his will. And so that's what we're seeing. Now, before we get into that, I want to do this little bit. So the great beast had 10 horns, right? So there's the beast. He had 10 horns. 10. And it says... And then a little horn shows up, and it uproots three horns, and then it grows into a gray horn, and it has eyes and a mouth that speaks great things. Okay, that was the thing from the... you like my drunks? That's what you do when you have to move fast. That's what it says. And the thing when I was telling you about these kings, we're going to find the same illustration in the book of Revelation. It's going to talk about... A beast with seven heads and 10 horns, and it's going to talk about the heads as being these kings. And what I said was, you know, these basically map to Roman emperors, and three of the last three before this one came up were only emperors for a very short time, and that's why in the prophecy it says they're uprooted. I was wrong. There are still three emperors, and they only lasted a short time, but it wasn't in that order, so I wanted to correct that. So here's the emperors of Rome. Okay, Julius Caesar, by the way, was never an emperor. Augustus was an emperor. So you got Augustus, Tiberius, and in fact, we know this from the Bible. What does it say in Luke? Who did the census? Yeah. Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius. We remember Claudius. What happened in Acts? Who got kicked out of Rome? The Jews. In particular, Priscilla and Aquila. Claudius was the one who kicked them out. Then came Nero. We remember Nero. What do we remember about Nero?
Burned Christians.
Burned Christians and burned Rome and blamed it on Christians. Right? He was the first really great persecuting emperor of Christianity. Then you have the three that everybody knows. Galba, Otto, and Vitellius. Have you ever heard of Caesar Galba, or Caesar Otto, or Caesar Vitellius? Of course you haven't. The reason is these guys only lasted a couple months apiece. They didn't last any time at all. So these guys basically never really got a firm hold on power. But they were declared to be emperors of Rome. And then you have a couple people that you do know, or you should know. Vespasian and Titus. What's the relationship between these two guys?
Were they brothers?
Father and son, you were close. Vespasian was the father of Titus. What do we know about Titus? What's Titus famous for?
Destroying Jerusalem.
He destroyed Jerusalem in 70 AD. Okay? Who started that effort? His daddy, Vespasian. Why didn't Vespasian hang around to finish the job? Because these guys, the last one, died, and it was up for grabs who was going to be the next Caesar. And Vespasian said, I'm going to be the next Caesar. I'm going back to Rome to claim the throne. Titus, you take care of these Jews. Basically what happened. So it's in 70 AD, right around 70 AD in here, is when the temple was destroyed, Jerusalem was destroyed, and the nation of Israel ceased. And then, you know, Titus reigned for a while, and he died, and then the next guy that came up was Domitian. Domitian reigned between, I think he died in 96 or so, and somewhere in the 80s to 96. Now, what was happening in the 90s, first century 90s?
Horrible persecution of the Christians.
Yeah, in fact, Domitian was well known for his persecution of Christians. He launched, and we'll find out a little later, effectively resurrected Nero's persecution of Christians, and that persecution continued for another 200 years until the Edict of Toleration of Constantine. Okay? So, but also what was going on in the 90s, first century 90s? The book of Revelation was written. John wrote the book of Revelation. So we're talking about a really interesting little bit here. And when you see, you remember what it said. There were 10 horns. These are 10, turns out. Surprise. 3 are plucked up. And then there's a new horn, an 8th horn. And he's bigger and badder than the rest of them. Now this is Daniel, remember. This is 500 years before Christ. And he's sitting there telling us all this detail. Now, he didn't say his name's going to be Augustus. His name's going to be Tiberius. Now, Isaiah did that a few years before Cyrus showed up, right? 150 years or whatever it was. But this is what history tells us happened. Now, when we look at this, I'm going to talk about a couple of things about it. First of all, when you look at this happening historically and you look back at Daniel, that's what we see every time we look back at Daniel's prophecies. They're historically fulfilled. They are nailed down, historically correct. And that's one of the reasons why the enemies of inspiration of the Bible, liberal scholars who want to say, Daniel was written maybe 100 years before Christ. All these prophecies are just history. He was just writing a history and just wrote it as if he was 700 years older and it, written it all in prophecy. Well, Daniel is actually so internally consistent that even the liberal scholars have now admitted that, Daniel lived back then. And we don't understand this because we don't believe in prophecy, but, it's hard to understand.
There's too much history to show that Daniel lived back then.
Yeah, there's just too much of it. Okay, now, the other thing we ran across was this little bit, this first reference to time, times, and half a time in chapter 7. Okay? We've heard that in a few places. We heard it before in Ezekiel 1. We will hear a lot about it in the book of Revelation. And it shows up in several forms. You will hear time, times, and half a time. You'll hear 42 months. You'll see 1260 days. You know what all those time periods are? 3.5 years. 3.5 years. Now, you got to realize, the way that the calendars worked back then was they had 12 months of 30 days apiece. So they had 360 days in a year. Okay, and then every so often they had an extra month to make up the difference. We have 365 and 1/4 days. We even have to have a leap year every 4 years to kind of catch up. They did it on a month scale. So they had their years, and then every so often they had to have an extra month that was kind of outside of the calendar to catch up with the solar cycle. So that's how they did it. So now you've got all these numbers. What in the world do they mean? People want to interpret all kinds of things around these things. The interesting thing about it, and I read this just this week, it was fascinating. Do you know where the concept of 3.5 years comes from? I didn't know this until I read it from a commentator, and I went back and looked at it. Sure enough, it's there. What happened to a little man named Elijah? You remember Elijah? First Kings 17, 18, 19, in that range. What's the big thing you remember about, there's a few big things you might remember about Elijah. What's one of the biggest things you remember about Elijah?
He prayed that it not rain.
He prayed that it not rain, and then he prayed that it does rain. Yes. And God told him, you have power to shut up the heavens, right? When did he pray and it started to rain? What just happened before he brought the rain back? They're up on a mountain.
They have 450 false prophets.
Mount Carmel. Elijah on Mount Carmel. Remember, he made the altar and you know, he said, okay, Jezebel, you bring all your prophets up here. I'm going to come up here. We're going to have a contest. Everybody says, that sounds great. Let's all go up on the mountain. He says, great. Build two altars and you guys build your altar and go ahead. Let's see if your God can answer by fire. And they run around crazy, cutting themselves and screaming and hollering. Nothing happens. And then Elijah says, go get some water pots. Wet this down real good. Build a trench around it. I want that trench full of water. He waters up the whole thing. He prays. God brings down fire from heaven, takes up the whole thing, licks up the water and everything, and then they kill the 450 prophets. And after that, Elijah takes off down the hill, outruns Ahab's chariot, runs all the way to Horeb, and he hangs out for quite a while. He's protected there. Do you know how long from in chapter 17 God says, Elijah, I want you to go down into the desert and hide. This is before Mount Carmel. I'm going to give you power to shut up the heavens, and I want you to go away and hide. And that's where he has the widow, you know, that had the oil and the flour, that she was out of food, and miraculously, you know, he made the food continue for that time and all that kind of stuff. You know how long it was from the time God told him to hide till the time that he was hiding after Mount Carmel? 3.5 years. Now, what's significant about that? And what's significant about every time we're going to hear about 3.5 years in its various forms? What's significant about it, you know, it's sort of like, you look at the whole book of Revelation, what's the big message of the book of Revelation? God's people win. You know? God's people are going to win. Now, you can get into all kinds of detail underneath it, but the big message is real clear. Three times and half a time, the big message in that, throughout all the places it's referenced, is it is a limited time, and because of that, it's a half of a seven, you know, seven being the complete number. This is a broken seven, or a partial seven. And the other thing is, every time you hear this, God's people are protected. It's a time of trouble, it's a time of difficulty, but God's people are protected. And so what you get in this whole really big theme that runs through the whole Bible is, when trouble comes, in a lot of cases, it's God saying it's going to come, right? He says, here's the prophecy, it's going to come. Trouble's coming. Sometimes he sends the trouble because they've sinned. The nation has sinned. But he says, my people, my remnant, are going to be protected, and these times of trouble are always going to be partial, and they're going to come to an end. So that's the thing that's coming in there. Now, let's move on to this. So here we have, let's read chapter 8. At least the first part of it. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me Daniel, after the one which had appeared to me the first time. I saw in a vision, and it so happened while I was looking, that I was at Shushan, the citadel, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in the vision that I was by the river Ulai. Then I lifted up my eyes and saw, and there standing by the river was a ram which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other. And the higher one came up last. And I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no animal could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver from his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west, across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Then he came to the ram, which had two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram, and he was moved with rage against him, and attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him down to the ground and trampled him. And there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. Therefore the male goat grew very great. But when he became strong, the large horn was broken. And in place of it, four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. And it grew up to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. And he even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. And by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Because of the transgression, an army was given to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground, and he did all this and prospered. Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to a certain one who was speaking, "How long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both of the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot?" And he said to me, "For 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed." Now let's stop right there. So that's the vision. In a minute, Daniel's going to get an interpretation. Angel's going to interpret the vision to him, but that's basically the vision. So let's take a little look at this for a second. So the first thing you realize is there's a time stamp on this. It says in the third year of King Belshazzar. Now the previous vision of the four beasts was the first year of Belshazzar. I mean, it says that right at the beginning of chapter 7. So this is in the time of Belshazzar's reign, still the Babylonians, before the Medes and Persians come and take over. But the vision, he's already talking about the Medes and Persians and the Greeks, right? So this is in the future at the time Daniel got it. And he tells where he was. This is real places. He says, in the vision, I was by a river. I lifted my eyes up, and I saw this ram coming with two horns. And they had two great horns, and one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. And he was pushing westward, northward, and southward. Now, I don't have a lot of room here. I'll tell you what, I'll erase it's not going to help a whole lot. We need a little map here. So I'm going to do a little simple map real quick. Okay, so Mediterranean Sea, Red Sea, Sinai, the Gulf of Aqaba, Arab, there's modern-day Iraq, Iran, all that kind of stuff. So now, up here you have Greece, right up here, and of course you have Italy down here, the boot of Italy. So you have Greece, you have Egypt, you have Babylon, right about here. I'm sorry, Babylon's right here. You have Persia, modern day Iran. And you have the Medes, the land of the Medes are right there. Now he says, and of course, you know, Sea of Galilee, Dead Sea, Jerusalem. Right, so that's our little map. Now what does he say? He says, first of all, the ram pushes westward, northward, and southward. So wherever he's at, he pushes westward, northward, and southward. And he's going to tell us in a minute that this is the Medes and the Persians. So he says basically they conquer in these directions. Okay? Nothing could withstand it. It became great. And then suddenly I saw a male goat coming from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. And he had a notable horn, a single horn between his eyes. So now, from the standpoint of Jerusalem, and in fact, I got to get the, it's really more like that. From the standpoint of Jerusalem, this is west, right? West is either the Mediterranean Sea or it's Greece, you know. And so he says he's coming from the west, so here he comes, and he's going to fight with these guys. And that's what happens. And then it says, when he is strong, his horn is broken. And four horns grow up to the four directions. So we'll get to that in a minute. Now, and then out of one of those horns comes a little horn, which grows exceedingly great to the south and toward the east and toward the glorious land. What do you think the glorious land is? Remember, this is Old Testament. What's the only glorious land that Daniel would recognize?
Jerusalem?
Yeah, it's Israel, Jerusalem. The land where God's people is, the promised land, right? And then it talks about it growing up to the host of the heaven, casting down some. There's some very interesting things there. He exalts himself and he takes away the daily sacrifice, and the place of his sanctuary is cast down, of God's sanctuary. Now, what time period are we talking about here? I mean, first of all, when is Daniel speaking? What's going on? 70 years of what?
War?
They're exiled, right? Jerusalem's destroyed when this is written. When Daniel's writing this, Jerusalem is in rubble. The temple's been destroyed. There is no daily sacrifice. They can't do a daily sacrifice somewhere else. It can only be at the temple. So he's talking about the future, and he's talking about the temple's been rebuilt. So somewhere out in the future, the temple's rebuilt, they're doing the sacrifices, and then the sacrifice is going to get taken away. Okay, so we'll just keep going. Because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground, and all he did prospered. And then two angels speaking to each other, how long is this going to be? And he says, 2,300 days. Then the sanctuary will be cleansed. So there is, remember, when Daniel's writing this, there is no sanctuary. It was destroyed. So the new sanctuary, whenever it comes, is going to get defiled. The daily sacrifice is going to get taken away. And then it's going to be cleansed after a period of time. Okay, so this is kind of what he's saying. Okay, verse 15. Then it happened, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning, that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Uli, who called and said, Gabriel, make this man understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said to me, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. Now, as he was speaking to me, and I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground, but he touched me, and I stood upright, and stood me upright. And he said, look, I'm making known to you what will happen in the latter time of the indignation. For at the appointed time the end shall be. The ram which you saw, having two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia, and the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between his eyes is the first king. As for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall rise out of that nation, but not with its power. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall rise with fierce features who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not with his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity, and shall even rise against the prince of princes. But he shall be broken without human means. The vision of the evenings and the mornings which was told is true. Therefore seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. Then I, Daniel, fainted and was sick for days. Afterwards I rose and went about the king's business. I was astonished by the vision, but no one understood it. Okay. So first of all here, we get our first named angel. What's his name? Gabriel. Gabriel actually shows up several times in the scripture. He shows up several times in Daniel. Where else does he show up? In the Gospels? Who does he talk to?
Mary.
Right? Gabriel's the one that comes to tell her she's going to have the Messiah, right? So this is a person, this is an angelic being. He's as angelic beings, they live a very long time. If they're not eternal, they live a very long time. I believe that they do at least live forever future, because they were creations of God. And his name's Gabriel. So we're going to get to know Gabriel a little bit in the book of Daniel. So he says he sees this one guy speaking, and then he sees this other guy, and the first guy says, hey, Gabriel, go tell Daniel, explain this stuff. Okay, so Gabriel comes and he starts explaining it. And first, what does he say first in verse 17? He came near to where I stood, and I became afraid, I fell on my face. But he said to me, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. Yeah. If we just took that one verse and we didn't read anything else, what would you think the end would be? Just out of our normal thinking.
The end of all time.
Yeah, the end of all time. But you remember when we were in Ezekiel? This is why it's good to read all these things together. Remember when we were in Ezekiel? And he was talking about the Edomites, if I remember correctly, it was the Edomites. And remember when he was talking about Jerusalem? There's a whole chapter where he says, the end has come, it has come, it will happen, it has come. He says, your end has come. Now, it wasn't the end of the whole world. It was the end of Jerusalem. And it wasn't when he talked about that other country. It was the end of that country. It was, he's gonna call them to a halt. So we have to be careful when we find references to the end that it isn't always talking about the end of time. And it's clear from the context that those were not talking about the end of time. So we might be talking about the end of time, we might not. So we just keep it open for a while and take a look. The vision refers to the time of the end. He was speaking to me, okay, he set me up on my, okay, verse 19. I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation. For at the appointed time the end shall be. So what do we know about this end that he's talking about?
The abomination of desolation.
Well, now, we're going to get there. Because that's an interesting case because there's at least two of those that occur in history. We'll talk about it. But, first of all, he's saying the time of the indignation. What's indignation mean? If you're indignant, what are you?
Angry.
You're angry. You just angry about anything? You're angry at something, right? Something has got you angry. We've heard this thing about the indignation before. The whole book of Ezekiel, up until the destruction of Jerusalem, you saw God's indignation at the wickedness of his people. And he finally said, I can't stand it anymore. I'm going to take my glory out of the temple, and we're going to wipe it out. That's what he did. So there's this indignation going on. It's God's indignation. And this latter time of indignation, there's a period of time where God's going to be angry and going to do something. Now, we don't know what time it is yet. Let's just leave it hanging for a minute. But it's an appointed time, and it's going to happen. God knows it's coming. He's already got it marked on his calendar. Verse 20, the ram which you saw having two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. That's about the easiest interpretation you'll ever get in the Bible. You see this thing? Okay, you got the Medes and you got the Persians. And it turns out that the Medes actually were the earlier kingdom, the Persians were later, and they happened to be greater than the first, and that's the big horn and the little horn. Right? And it says, you know, one's going to be bigger, the latter one's going to be bigger. And then he says, there's another one. The male goat is the kingdom of Greece. There's another really easy one. And the large horn is that's in his, between his eyes is the first king. Okay, now who was the first king of the Grecian Empire? I'll give you a hint. It was not Alexander the Great.
His father?
Yeah. I believe his name is Philip, if I remember correctly. But he's not talking about Philip. He's talking about Alexander the Great. He didn't say the first king ever in the empire. He said, the first king I'm talking about with a big horn is the first king. And what does this goat do? Where does he come from? The West, right? The West. How does he move around? How does he move? His feet doesn't even touch the ground, man. He's moving quick. You know, it's like in the cartoons where all you see is the feet pedaling in the air, there's no land underneath them, and things really zipping along. That's what he's describing. He says, this guy moves really fast. Now, what do we know about Alexander the Great? His big claim to fame is as a military leader. He conquered the known world in just a few years, and the reason he did is he moved like lightning. That was his MO. He moved fast, and he was brutal, and he just swept through. So, he says, great, so here we go. We know who this is. This is Greece. So says the angel. We know who that is. He's the first great ruler that takes over the earth at this time period. So here's Alex the Great. But what happens? It says when he is strong. He said nothing can withstand him. He breaks off these horns. He stomps this critter to death. And he's great and strong. And then what happens to the horn?
It breaks off.
Yeah. The horn's broken. Well, hold it. The horn's the king and the horn's broken. What does that mean? King's gone. What happened to Alexander?
He died.
How did he die? Did he die in battle? Some great battle where some other great warrior killed him?
Some disease or something.
Yeah. He died from disease and drunkenness, says the historians. So here it's broken off. Okay? So it's broken off. And then what happens next?
four part thing.
Four, well, first of all, what does the prophecy say? Prophecy says there are four horns, right? Four horns come up toward the four winds of heaven. That's significant. And then he says, the way he explains it here, let's do it. He says, as for the broken horn, verse 22, that stood up in his place, four kingdoms shall rise out of that nation, but not with its power. So he says, the kingdom is split up into four kingdoms, but none of them are as powerful as Alexander's merged kingdom was. What do we know about these four kings? What do we know about happened after Alexander died? What happened to his kingdom? It was split up amongst his four generals. Okay, I don't remember all their names. Two of them you remember because two of them become the major clans of the north and the south, the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. Okay? We're going to hear a whole lot more of those later in Daniel. Because it gets really, really detailed about the history, which is then future to Daniel, of these two major clans. So each of these guys get part of the kingdom. They're not quite as strong. They go to the four winds. Guess what you got? Here he's down here. They go to the four winds. So we've got some that are going to be strong to the north, south, east, and west. Turns out the north, later on, we're going to hear a whole bunch about the king of the north. And we're going to get a whole bunch about the king of the south. Those are two of those kings. The other two kind of fade away. They don't really dominate in history. Now, in the latter time, verse 23. In the latter time of their kingdom, what kingdom are we talking about? We're still in the Grecian Empire, right? We're still in the Grecian Empire in the kingdom of these four kings. So these four kingdoms come about, and during the time that they're still ruling, not their kings individually, but their lines, right? Their kingdoms, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, who's said to be a transgressor? What does it mean to transgress?
You attack first.
No, not to transgress. To transgress means you step over the line, right? You break the rules. You sin. We hear about transgression all the time, right, in the Bible. Hold it. These guys are wicked pagans. Their whole life is a transgression. What's he talking about? When the transgressors have reached the fold. Let's keep that in mind and think about what's about to happen. So, one of these horns, out of one of these horns, is a little horn that grows up. So what's it saying? A descendant of one of these kings is going to be king. And when this guy comes to power, listen. A king shall rise with fierce features who understand sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. Whenever you hear that, what does it mean? The rock cut out of the mountain without hands. You know, Nebuchadnezzar, you're going to be made to eat grass like an ox until you acknowledge what? God is in control. Who set up this guy? Who made this little horn powerful? God. He set him up. Who made Hitler powerful, by the way? God. Yeah, who made Nero powerful? Domitian powerful? Augustus powerful? God. Daniel says so right at the beginning of the book. He raises up kings and he takes down kings. So he's in control. Now, notice what he says. He shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and will prosper and thrive. He will destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Who are the holy people?
Jews.
The Jews in this time period, right? He's going to destroy the Jews. He's going to fight against the Jews and destroy them. Through his cunning, he shall cause deceit deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. Uh-oh. All through Daniel, what's the thing that takes down kings?
Pride.
What's this king going to have a problem with? Pride. He's going to exalt himself in his own heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes. Who might that be? Who is King of Kings and Lord of Lords?
Christ.
And Prince of Princes. Yeah. Now, granted, this is you know, a couple hundred years before Christ. He shall be broken without human means. There you go. God's taking him down. God set him up. God's going to take him down. And the vision of the mornings and evenings which are told is true. Therefore, seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. Boy, that's a really important line. Gabriel tells Daniel, I'm going to explain the situation to you, but seal it up, because it's for a long time in the future. Now, you know where you don't find that language? In the book of Revelation. You know what the book of Revelation says? Seal not up, because the time is at hand. It says it twice. It says the beginning and the end. Jesus says, I come to tell you the things that are about to happen, that are close at hand. And at the end it says, seal up, seal not up the writings of this book, for the time is at hand. Here, whatever the prophecy is about, he's told, this is a long time off, seal it up. You don't have to worry about this, just seal it up. It's a long time off. Okay, we know a few things from history about this little horn. There's a guy that rose up in the Greeks, in the Greek kings. His name was Antiochus. His name, in fact, was Antiochus Epiphanes, which means the obvious one. You want to talk about pride. This guy had a pride problem. His name meant, I'm the manifest, obvious king of the world. That's what his name means. Turns out that Antiochus Epiphanes did exactly what was said here. He raged over this whole area, conquered all over the place. He was the one that also, he hated the Jews, fought against them, took over, and defiled the temple. Because he sacrificed pig's blood and sacrificed pigs on the altar of God and covered the altar and the temple with pig's blood. And you can imagine what, you know, how a Jew would have perceived that. About as just as worse defilement as it could be. And this is Antiochus Epiphanes. By the way, you know how Antiochus Epiphanes dies? He was a great warrior, a right? Very successful warrior. Fought all over the place, won everything he fought, almost everything. You know, he goes and he just dies. He gets sick and dies. It's another. God just takes him out. Not by anybody can say, I killed Antiochus Epiphanes. No, God took him out. But he says, this happened many days in the future. You know when this happened? You know when Antiochus Epiphanes lived? On the order of, what, 200 years before Christ? About 100 years? 175 B.C. So what does that mean? From the time that Daniel wrote these things and was told to seal them up because they're in the distant future, and then the things happened historically, was 400 years, roughly. Now hold on a second. I thought he said this was distant time. 400 years. This is what the scripture says, 400 years. Now, when we read the book of Revelation, I'm going to stop right after this. When we read the book of Revelation, what's the normal thought of lots of people about what a lot of those prophecies are about? What time period do they believe those prophecies are about? Are they past or future? Future. Some say they're present, right? They're about to happen any day now, right? Those books said, that book said what? Don't seal up this, for the time is at hand. Jesus said it. It's Jesus' revelation to John. Don't seal it up, for the time is at hand. 2,000 years later, people are saying it's still in the future.
Well, it even starts out, these things must
shortly come to pass. Exactly. Keep that in mind. But if Daniel was told, seal it up, it's a long way in the future, and 400 years later it happens, now we know what they mean by a long time, right? But then over here in Revelation, Jesus says, surely come to pass, don't seal it up, time is at hand. Why do we believe that none of this is happening for 2,000 years? It makes no sense. It makes no sense. So, we'll stop there. And it gets even more interesting next week. So, we're zooming in. We're going to zoom in again next time. Thank you.